Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This week, joining me in studio is Matt Kim.
Hello.
We're also joined by Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
And Justin Davis.
Scoop.
We got a great show for this week. We have a live-action Zelda movie to talk about, which I raise my eyebrow at. And it's time to talk about Grand Theft Auto 6, because we are going to be getting a full reveal of that in, I guess, maybe a month from now, if not sooner than that. But first, Sam, I believe you played through all of the new WarioWare game. Is that right?
Oh, I didn't play through all of it. Okay. I played through to the most important part. It was when you unlock the games that are based on retro games.
Oh, good.
Which go up to, like, you know, Wii U now or whatever. I guess they go up to Switch because they had, what's the Ring Fit came out for Switch, right?
Yeah.
There's a Ring Fit game in there. But yeah. Didn't it?
I was just trying to think if it was Wii U, but I guess it was Switch.
Yeah, there's a bunch of funny stuff. There's, like, you know, a GameCube Pikmin game and, you know, the requisite Mario and stuff like that references. It's really great. And so I always like WarioWare games for that. We gave it, a 7 or 8, I think. And it's interesting. It would have made a really good launch game because it's all about the Switch controllers,
6 years ago?
The Joy-Cons. Yeah. Because, you know, they didn't have a lot of games like that at the time. They're kind of avoiding that kind of Wii thing where, like, everything's going to use these controllers forever, you know? But this game, like, I like my WarioWare games to be creative, and it'd be really fun as a party game, but, like, playing solo is, like, kind of weird, like, how this game requires.
Yeah.
It's a lot of motion. But that one they're showing right now, if you're watching a video, that is incredible. At the end of your... The end of your Joy-Con can read your hands. Like, you point it at your hand, it can read how many fingers you're holding up, or if you're doing a gesture or whatever. Did we know this?
I didn't know this.
It basically projects infrared something into a space in front of something and can read the warmth of the imprint of your hand. It's, like, it's incredible. I'm just, like, totally amazed by that. Everything else is just kind of BS motion controls, but really good games with really funny scenarios and graphics. And the whole thing takes place on a tropical island, and it's great. But can't recommend it at my highest recommendation. It's, like, motion based, and, like, you know, just with a couple of friends and some beers or whatever. It's really well made and a fun game.
Cool. Well, I am also continuing with Alan Wake 2. I think you are playing it, or are you?
I'm also playing.
Okay.
I think I'm almost done.
Really?
I don't want to say where I am, but I feel very close to the end.
Then you're definitely farther than me. I'm in the this is not a spoiler. Everyone knows this. You don't start the game playing as Alan Wake. You start as Saga, the FBI detective who can't decide which accent she wants to use. And then you play as Alan Wake. And I'm still in the big, like, section, the first section you play as Alan Wake. And I know Sam is still playing it. Justin, any Alan Wake for you?
Oh, no, but I did start Spider-Man and Mario.
Cool. Those are both very good video games.
Yeah, they both are. Not both. I should say Spider-Man. Spider-Man's very safe. It's great. It's, like, so polished. All the set piece moments are incredible. It's doing that big AAA video game thing. But, like, I wish. It's a very safe video game. It feels very safe and kind of, like, by the numbers as a sequel, which, you know, is so dismissive of all the creativity on display of the combat and the gadgets and all of that. Like, you know, just the expertise of like, again, we just don't get that kind of Uncharted-esque, I'm going to take you on a big journey video game as often as we used to. But for me, I kind of like my games with a little bit more edge and a little bit more risk to them. So I played Spider-Man for, I don't know, 3 or 4 evenings, got maybe halfway through. And, like, I didn't make a decision of, like, I'm not going to play this anymore, but I haven't chosen to go back to it since then.
Well, I know several of the people on staff felt similarly to you, and we talked about this when it first came out. I actually liked it a lot. I loved it, but I did not play Miles Morales, and I only played a little bit of the original Spider-Man. So it feels, if anyone else feels like a little bit been there, done that, I didn't have that same experience, but...
I do really like how Miles and Peter just call each other Spider-Man.
Yeah, they're just
like, hey, Spider-Man, just Spider-Man. Over here. He's like, thanks, Spider-Man.
Yeah,
and like, I actually think that that's really endearing and cute. And like, the game's full of like really good like kind of moments like that. But I just,
yeah, I agree.
You know, I don't know. Like, I had my fill of it before I finished the game. The game's not even all that long.
Well, Sam, you did finish it fairly recently, right?
Yep.
So like, yep, now I mean, that it's behind
and
you,
I thought it had a. Yeah, I thought it had a pretty thing, and the general, you know, it starts off with one villain, and then it switches to a whole different set of antagonists. And I thought I thought every villain in the game ended up being pretty corny, except for like the main antagonist. But like all the spinoff and like the minions, like the story and like what happens with everybody that's like not the main final villain is like really silly. And then the ending is confusing, and then they introduce like characters that are going to be in another game presumably and stuff like that, and I had to look all that up, and it was really obscure.
I do want to discuss one thing that you brought up, Sam, and this is a spoiler for the end of Spider-Man, so if you want to jump forward a couple minutes, we can do that. It does a really lazy thing that a lot of movies do, where there's a main monster, but then they're like, oh, now there's a lot of little monsters that are just like it. And it's always like, really? Like, that's what we're going to do here? So there's a lot of little Venoms everywhere. Thousands of other little Venoms. It's like, okay.
They do that at the beginning of the game with Sandman, too.
Well, yeah. That didn't bother me as much. But I always just think
the Venoms
kind of
thing is strange, too, because they're doing, like, a Carnage, you know, tease also. And it's like, who cares? Like, the whole point of Carnage is like, wow, there's another symbiote? I mean, that's crazy. Whoa, he made a few more in Maximum Carnage? That's amazing. They're so powerful. How is anybody ever going to stop them? And it's like, no, all of New York City had 10 million symbiotes in it. Like,
I do appreciate, at least I appreciate that they created original animations for the finishing moves when you're knocking the civilians out of their symbiotes. I appreciate that they actually added that part. That was nice.
Yeah, they all definitely died, as we made a video about too.
Well, yeah,
it's got to be some of the best animations in video games ever all time. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
And reflections are really good too.
Yeah, and then the post-credits scene went completely over my head too. I had no idea what that. I had to look that up too, Sam. I was like, well, that doesn't mean anything to me, but okay.
I downloaded and started playing Lord of the Rings Online again. So
okay, here we are.
You're gonna enjoy hearing the new. I made a new character. I made Bulbin the Warden. He's a hobbit. Mm-hmm. Nice. And since he started, there's a new expansion out that goes to the Haradwaith, goes to the city of Umber down in the south. But since I started a new character, you know, I just had to go through the Bree Land and the Shire, and now. I'm adventuring around the Lone Lands near Weathertop, or known as the original Sindarin as Amon Sul, as I'm sure you all know.
Yes, the Great Watchtower of Amon Sul.
Correct. Yes.
Definitely something that I know what you're going to talk about.
Is it the best MMO? No. Is it the most accessible, easiest to play MMO? Also, no. but the game's very, I just have a real soft spot for it. And, you know, I think it's great. I go back.
It's that time of year, right?
It is.
This is when you watch and play Lord of the Rings.
There's something about it. It's like you got to start eating more soup and got to re-download Lord of the Rings online.
More soup.
No, I mean, the game's free to play, right? Which is such a, can be such a nasty thing for video games, can make you feel like you're being nickel and dimed all the time. But in the context of an MMO, I actually think it's really nice because it makes it, it's more stress-free to be like a weekend warrior, right? Like, I don't need to feel like I'm getting my $15 worth of like, ooh, I'm taking a week off the game and I'm paying this monthly subscription fee. But the game being free makes it really easy to dip in and out of it for, you know, a day or a week. Or in my case, like, I think it's been like 2-3 years since I played it. So happy to be back, enjoying myself tremendously. I feel like it's going to stick this time, but, you know, we'll see how I'm feeling when I'm like level 80 and I'm in like, you know, Angmar or something and just I hate my life. Then maybe I'll delete the game again, but that's fine.
When I assume, Justin, that you're enjoying Mario Wonder.
I have not played it. I'm playing it with my family, which is just a fucking, it's a chore. I'm not having a good time, which I don't, that's not a knock on the game. That's a knock on my children.
My family.
if, Someday when they're old and they listen to this show, I'm sorry, girls. I'm not the only person like Brian Altano, other people like Nintendo sometimes gets sort of family based multiplayer really, really right. All the times I'm playing it, I'm just like, man, I wish I could just like do this. I want to just play this game myself. Yeah. I don't want to be like carrying my kids through this. It's a little bit frustrating for them.
Mm. Yeah. It is frustrating that my son just gave up on it. So I actually have been playing it by myself and still enjoying that. And then speaking of older games like Lord of the Rings Online, Justin, during the Halloween spooky season, I wanted to play something spooky. The guy said he wanted something spooky. So I started Darkest Dungeon again. Oh. Got sucked all the way back into that. So now, every night, along with Alan Wake 2, I have to play a little Darkest Dungeon also. Oh,
spooky. Double spooky.
That's good.
And you don't play Darkest Dungeon 2?
It's only on PC in Early Access, I think. So I'll be waiting.
It came out of Early Access finally, but it might not be ported to anything yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's ported. So bring it to a console and I'll play Darkest Dungeon 2. Anyway, Alan Wake 2, no spoilers for our viewers and listeners out there, and also for our producer, Tom, who is saving it. He's playing through Control right now, and he's saving Alan Wake 2 for him, so we're not going to spoil anything. We also
have a God mic deck.
Yeah, that's Tom. We also have a God mic on now, in case Tom ever wants to interject. He has that ability.
Oh, if I start hearing Alan Wake 2 spoilers, I will riot.
This is not a spoiler. I just want to say that I'm very much enjoying it, and when you do switch to playing Alan Wake, it does something awesome. That's all I wanted to say. And I don't know. Sam, do you agree it's awesome, or did you think it was too...
No, I thought it was too up its own ass, but okay. I loved the game so far.
Whoa, we're looking at some interesting B-roll right there. It does something...
But I like the game in general. I have no problem with it. And then, like, we already know this, but, like, there's a lot of mashups of live action with the game, and it's so cool. It's so cool how it uses that.
I loved it. Well,
are there elements of that part that Damon's talking about? I thought were a little auteur Kojima-like, and I think a little bit dorky.
I think
really loved that stuff.
Yeah, I think they took a big swing, and I loved it. It elevated the game for me. We'll dig into that deeper maybe in a future episode. But loving Alan Wake 2. Okay, let's move on to some news this week. A live action Legend of Zelda movie is being inflicted upon us. Sorry, I don't want to be too negative. It's just, I think a lot of people were expecting it, you know, if Nintendo were to make a Zelda movie, that it would be animated. They had so much success with the Mario Brothers and Illumination. I could see them, like, that solves a lot of problems. First of all, it solves having, like, silly CGI monsters, bokoblins, running at Link, and it's all, you know, it would be easier for them to have a silent Link if it was like a little cute character, like, and they could do a Link to the Past sort of thing. Anyway, but now we're getting a live action Legend of Zelda, and it just seems like the team that they're putting together, it doesn't instill a lot of confidence. It's not like, whoa, this is an awesome director and an awesome producer and an awesome writer. It's just kind of like, these guys?
Do you think they're going to have like a glass of water shaking and then they're going to be like, what is that? Like, Dodongo!
The joke is that the writer wrote Jurassic World and the sequels.
the director did Maze Runner.
Like, yeah, the three Maze Runner movies.
The first Maze Runner movie is fine, right? Like, there's a long, long history of these people doing kind of like middling work and then just have an absolute banger, like a breakout, like if they're given the right creative team and given the freedom. Like, there's two kinds of directors. There's directors that are like making the movie that they want to make, and then there's like directors for hire that are like, okay, I'll do this teen dystopia movie. And like, it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with like their actual skill, but even so, that's all we have to go on so far, right? Like, you think Zelda, it's like this is a really, like, a lot of it means a lot to us, right? Yeah. And so I think that people are very rightfully concerned.
Well, yeah, with this director, Wes Ball, someone else at IGN made the point, this guy probably delivers his movies on time and on budget. And, like, for something like this, that's, you know, this is not going to be the work of an auteur, a singular vision written and directed by Quentin Tarantino. This movie will be made by a huge committee. Right. So they just need someone who can do the work, get the shots in day by day, and get the movie in on time and on budget. And maybe this is the right guy.
It's very cynical.
I mean, I'm just saying. produced by Shigeru Miyamoto and Avi Arad. And Avi Arad's produced lots and lots of stuff. A bunch of Spider-Man movies, the 2000 X-Men movie, but also Morbius and the Venom movies and Uncharted. So it's like, okay, he's done a lot of good, cool stuff and a lot of stuff I'm not interested in. And then the writer is the Jurassic World guy. He also did Kong Skull Island and Detective Pikachu.
Okay.
So anyway, it's like this team is get together. It's like it's there's not the based on the information that we have now, I don't think there's a lot of reason for me to get excited, except for maybe we should give Nintendo the benefit of the doubt because they did so well with the Mario movie.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of the Mario movie, right? Like when they first announced that one, like it's not. I don't think it's controversial to say that when they announced Chris Pratt was going to be Mario, people were like, yeah, this is going to be great. You know, it was a little left field casting, and, you know, he turned out to be good in it. And, you know, of all the animation studios that they got, they partnered up with Illumination, which, you know, makes gorgeous looking movies. But I think they were best known for Despicable Me and the Minions movies before then, you know. And so that's another one of those like, oh, well, maybe kind of partnerships. Right. So Nintendo, but I interviewed Shigeru Miyamoto for the Mario movie, and he seemed like he was really hands-on with the process of making that movie. And so if he's going to be producing the Zelda movie, I have to imagine that he's going to give the same sort of level of hands-on-ness that he did with the Mario movie. And I think that's like one of those like real big upsides that is hard to quantify, you know?
Yeah, sure. I can see that. Let me ask you all this. Going live action, does that tell us that while the Mario movie is very silly and it's just filled with like references, going live action, does that tell us this is going to be a much more serious movie?
Yeah, they're absolutely going to Lord of the Rings it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. The Jango!
I know. But Lord of the Rings-ing it would be a best case scenario, because when I think you know, exploring Hyrule with the mountains in the distance and the dense forests and delving into caves, I want it to look like Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy.
I was talking to someone about this. I kind of like, if they're going to like Lord of the Rings it and like try to like emulate like a Peter Jackson style for it, I kind of want them to go a little bit more Hobbit-y than Lord of the Rings-y, because I think Lord of the Rings is too serious for Zelda. Like, Zelda is like is darker and more, you know, fantastical than Mario for sure, but like it also has a lot of whimsy and a lot of like fun and silly moments. Like I think the Hobbit is actually like a really good like tonal goal for a live action Zelda movie.
Yeah, and my main issue is the tone of that Zelda already strikes, which is like, it's just corny as hell. Like, it's my favorite game series. I love it. But, like, the Master Sword looks so stupid. And
does it?
All the enemies have stupid. Yeah, it's like a big, chonky blue sword. Like,
it's going to be.
It just looks idiotic.
Well, I think.
And, like,
that,
like all the enemies have dumb names.
Bokoblins.
Like, it's just like, embarrassing. Yeah, and, like, it was made, like, translated poorly for kids in, like, 1986. And then they just used every single element from that first game over and over again. Do I love that? Yes, in video games. But I don't want to see like the serious origin. This is just episode one stuff. Like, do you want to see how the Master Sword was created? Like, it becomes a big chonky blue dumb sword that's not even sharp. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. This is ridiculous material.
That's how I feel about the hat.
Let me just point out that Link doesn't speak. He doesn't speak. Do you want to hear him speak or not? Does it matter? That's a bad protagonist, right? And he wears a dumb green tunic. Like, that's embarrassing stuff. Like, you can't make a movie about this stuff cool.
It's going to be really, really hard. The tunic and hat and, like, elf ears. Like, he's going to have to be a very cool elf hero. Like,
they got to find the next Orlando Bloom.
And even Orlando Bloom wasn't cool in the second trilogy.
No. Oh.
And so that in my, like, Link is overwhelmingly the hardest part of the whole thing in my
Orlando opinion. Bloom is catching strays on this podcast. He's just like,
he was great as Legolas in The Lord of the Rings.
In The Lord of the Rings, yeah. And I think you're totally right. Like, Princess Zelda is kind of neat, but then Ganon is a freaking giant pig. Do you want to see that in CG?
It's gonna be weird, man.
And don't get me started on the Triforce. It's three dumb triangles. Like, come on. Like, courage, power, wisdom. This stuff is bullshit.
I mean,
it's not good.
I was equal parts, like, before. Like, you know, I think we all knew a Zelda movie was coming. But if they did an animated Zelda movie, it would have been Illumination again. And so it was like, ooh, like, that's also, like, a monkey's paw sort of wish situation. So it's like, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other. Like, you know, they made their choice. It being live action probably means we're never going to get like the Nintendo Cinematic Universe with the Smash Brothers crossover in a decade.
Can I actually jump in and speak to a little bit of a theory I have in terms of how they could handle that?
Yes,
because I think they can have their cake and eat it too. And I think the way to go with that is you can still have that Link in a Smash Brothers animated thing. Make him Toon Link.
Oh, yeah, just do a different
adorable, but you need to have a Spider-Man pull him into the Spider-Verse to make that possible.
They could do like a Roger Rabbit and have like live action Link and just the animated Mario.
What's the one thing worse than a live action Zelda movie? A Roger Rabbit Zelda movie.
But that just makes me want a Wind Waker animated movie from Illumination. Yeah, that sounds great.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, and people were talking about Miyazaki style for that and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all fine. But Zelda is also like, just aside from just the, you know, the goofiness of it, which is intentional, and again, I love it in games. It doesn't tell like a meaningful story usually, and when it tries to, it doesn't really sink. You know. Hit it really well. But so if we're thinking about this medium that's about telling a story and you're taking out all of the other Zelda stuff and you're like, we're just gonna do the story, like that just seems like a bad match to me. Like it doesn't seem like a good idea. I have one more thing. Okay. I can keep on going, but one more thing. All fantasy is based on Lord of the Rings, right? Like people don't get much more creative than that. They're like, here's these classes. Now Zelda does kind of do some spins on that, like, you know, like it is its own fantasy world, so like I will give it that, is that's cool and like a little bit different, even though that like Link is basically a hobbit and the Hylians are basically elves, like those classes are still in there, the orcs or the mobs, but like it's a little bit better than complete just generic D&D stealing all the terms.
Yeah,
which again, D&D is fine, that's what it did, and then they all took it from Wagner, so and you know, Norse mythology. So what can you do?
You're saying that.
I mean, I was just saying, I saw online that a lot of people were saying a really interesting way to do this would be to do like a Hansen style, like mixed puppet medium kind of movie.
Make it look like the Dark Crystal.
Like a Dark Crystal kind of thing. Yeah. But also at the same time, I think people discovered the director Wes Ball's like old tweets. And in 2013, he actually tweeted something along the lines of, I know what the next big Avatar-style mocap movie should be, and it's The Legend of Zelda. So if he's directing the movie and that's what he thinks is the way to go, we probably won't get the puppet stuff, and we might get a little mocap-y, maybe.
But then what would that be
for? I don't know what that would be for. Yeah.
I don't know.
You could imagine Zora that looked like Na'vi from Avatar.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
But oh my god, get me started on the Zora and Gorons. Oh my god. It's a Goron!
Whether this movie is good or whether this movie is terrible, like, we're going to be feasting. We're going to be feasting on the Zelda movie in, you know, three or 4 years or whenever it comes out. Like, it's all anyone in, like, any of our circles is going to care about and talk about because, like, again, like, good or bad, like, we are not going to be able to take our eyes off whatever this Legend of Zelda movie becomes.
Do you think Nintendo can resist doing
flight a lot easier?
Do you think Nintendo can resist doing Star Fox as Top Gun or Top Gun as Star Fox?
Metroid as Alien,
which it completely ripped off.
I'd watch that movie. I'd watch a Metroid movie.
Sure.
You can watch it. It's from 1978. Ridley Scott made it.
I think it's 79.
Six? Is that right? Nine? Okay. Thank you for pushing up your glasses while saying that.
Anyway, the other interesting thing is that the Zelda movie will be co-funded and distributed by Sony.
Weird, right?
Yeah. Sony's going to pay for half of the
Zelda
movie.
Did you see the little detail where Nintendo was like, but they're not, we're the majority by 1%.
Okay.
I also like
49-51 split.
I love when Nintendo gets all awkward and weird and just like, you know, weird Nintendo directs. It's like their whole thing of like on Twitter, it was like the tweet starts with like, Miyamoto here. Yeah. I'm this happy to announce. Yeah, this is Miyamoto. I'm just like, what? It's so weird. Like, it's weird.
The next Grand Theft Auto will be revealed next month. Mm. It was revealed this week that the game will be revealed next month. What's interesting to me is that Rockstar is still not calling this Grand Theft Auto 6.
No.
Still calling it the next Grand Theft Auto. There are lots of theories about that because based on leaks that have already happened, supposedly it's set in Miami. So they could do Vice City again, or it could just be Grand Theft Auto Vice, and the V and the I could make 6. They want to just lean into that.
I
mean,
that's fun. I like that, actually.
That would be great.
Thanks, I hate it.
Or maybe it's just...
We haven't had one of those sort of font puns since, what, Resident Evil? Resident Evil 7 and the Biohazard stuff?
Yeah. With Village, yeah.
Yeah. Village, my bad.
Village, that was the V for 8, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just Grand Theft Auto. Because like 5 was like so all consuming, and then they have GTA Online, online service. So maybe it's just Grand Theft Auto now.
I feel like Rockstar has a bit of a has fallen into a little bit of a trap where they can't do that, because Grand Theft Auto 5 has been around for so long and has been the only Grand Theft Auto game that you can play for a decade that they kind of have to differentiate it. Because it's become the shorthand. Oh, do you play GTA? You know, like, and they just mean 5, right? So they have to differentiate it somehow from the game that is the only GTA game that you can currently play. Mm. I mean, you can play the other ones.
It's going to be GTA 6.
Yeah.
Just GTA 6, okay.
I think they're just...
But to say, like, look forward to the GTA 6 reveal next month, like, pre-announces the product. So it's like, you know, I don't think there's any sort of secret or deeper meaning in there.
I have one weird theory.
There you go.
Well, because it's taken so long to make GTA 6 and GTA Online is so successful and they want people to play these games for a long time, they could name it something like GTA Forever, you know, Grand Theft Auto Forever, something like that, and just be like, this is it, and we're just going to keep updating this game every 10 years and you just play this one over and over again.
Is that what you want?
Grand Theft Auto 6 ever.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. Like, I didn't enjoy the wait from GTA 5 to this new one, so...
Yeah. What do we want from GTA 6? Because I don't know what GTA is anymore. It's been so long since 5. Mm-hmm. The world's very different now. Mm-hmm. A lot has happened in the past 10 years. I don't know if anyone has been paying attention.
I mean, Rockstar has all kinds of quotes about, like, it's impossible to parody anything anymore just because the extreme reality has gotten so extreme sort of across the spectrum that, like, what does parody even look like? And by the way, like, I really like GTA 5. I agree with, like, our 10 out of 10 review score that we gave it. I think it's one of the all-time greats. But the parody in these games has never been... It's put on this pedestal of, like, oh, they're taking down anybody and everybody. And, like, the political ads in the radio are like, I hate immigrants and vote for me. And, you know, it's like, this is not, like, deep... Like, it's pretty superficial, honestly. And this comes from a place of love. So it's like, you know, this idea that, like, oh, there's nothing left to parody anymore. It's like GTA has always just been, it's been silly more than anything on that front. So I'm not worried about that part of it.
I mean, like, it can just double down on being an open world crime game, right? Like, that's like, there's surprisingly few of those. There was a bunch of clones, but there's not now. And, like, just being a cool open world crime game is what they need to do. What they're missing is what they had in Red Dead, which is, like, that game's about building a family and has a really sweet core to it and, like, an amazing set of characters. Like, GTA, like, is like, here's 3 psychopaths, lol.
It's always been a lot more.
It doesn't have that.
It's been very nihilistic compared to Red Dead.
That's kind of what I think I would enjoy if they leaned away from the silly stuff and told just, like, a great dramatic story like they did with Red Dead 2. I think I would be more interested in that.
I guarantee there's
they kind of did that in San Andreas, you know, like they were like, we gotta help moms, you know?
Yeah. But then like there's also like that Heat bank robbery, you know, that game is also pretty silly.
Yeah.
What's up, Matt?
I'm nothing. Just guaranteeing that there's going to be one NFT joke in 6.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, my, yes.
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know what... I'll be very interested to see what it is. Grand Theft Auto 3 was such a phenomenon because it felt dangerous, I think. It felt edgy. Like, it let you be a criminal, let you steal cars, it let you drive into an alley with a prostitute and enjoy their services. And it was like, nothing else felt like that at that time. But, like, there's been 100 other games that do all sorts of even crazier things than that now. I don't know. It's been 10 years since the last GTA. I just don't know what it is. If it is like a Vice City set game, especially if it's set in the 80s, that would be very appealing to me. I don't know.
I mean, I know, and I'm aware that this is a minority opinion of mine, but like, I'm not excited about the Vice City Miami setting at all.
Oh,
like,
really?
I mean, I know it's beloved, right? Like, it's the most beloved GTA setting, but my thing is, like, GTA is, you know, a satirization of America and American culture, and like, Miami just doesn't. It's like no one ever thinks about or talks about the city of Miami anymore. Like, it feels like
it was a product
of the 80s, right? Like, you know, like, it should be set in, like, the center of American culture, in my opinion. Like, you know, New York, L.A., the Bay Area are better areas for a game.
I like their period piece, though, in Red Dead. And I think a period piece of an era is compelling to me. Yeah. Like, not geographically, but just time setting wise. Like, the 80s is, like, a really fun idea, music-wise and aesthetic-wise and everything. I think it could go a long way.
That I
agree
with.
Plus, it limits you. You don't have to do a cell phone cheats, which are the worst cheats ever.
I do agree with that.
Action controller cheats.
Except that they made that game already. Like,
I know.
Here's one thing about the period setting that I'm not sure about is that it's the reason why GTA Online did so well and the reason why Red Dead Online didn't do so well is that GTA Online is set in like the present day, and so you have access to all sorts of like crazy vehicles and airplanes and helicopters, and you could just do ridiculous things like, you know, skydive off of a bomber and then into an ATV or something, right? You can't do that in Red Dead Online, right? Because they were very strict about like, yeah, there's no like old Western helicopter that you can jump out of. I feel like that's, if they're trying to replicate GTA Online again and do a GTA Online 2 to go along with GTA 6, a period piece kind of limits that fun, you know? Like if they're trapped in the 80s Miami, you don't have rocket ships or something that you can, I mean, I guess you do, right? But I don't know. It seems limiting in a way that maybe won't serve the online component of the game.
But maybe they keep GTA Online but update it for the current tech. GTA 6 can be a period piece, but then all of the like improvements and quality of life features can be brought into GTA Online, but keep that in a modern setting.
Yeah, I don't think they want to lose their people on GTA Online too. So it could be more of a map swap in GTA Online.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll find out more next month. They said the trailer's coming in December. What do we think? Part of the Game Awards or no, because they want to do their own event?
I think they can do their own thing.
I mean, Rockstar certainly can.
I say no.
Yep.
Who knows? I mean, if you're a younger GameScoop listener, like GTA 5 is old, right? Like I worked here as a relatively new employee when that game came out. And like, it is impossible to understate how big that was as like a cultural event and like, you know, just a moment online, like anything and everything that you wanted to write about GTA or any video that you made, like it just went completely crazy for like a year. Like it took over everything in a way that, like, think about whatever the biggest game you want to think about over the last few years, like GTA 5 was bigger than all of them, just in terms of just cultural weight behind it. It was unbelievable. I don't know that it's actually ever been repeated.
No, I don't think so. The most profitable entertainment thing ever released. Okay, today Valve announced the Steam Deck OLED, and we reviewed it. That doesn't happen very often, that hardware is announced and reviewed on the same day, but that's pretty cool. We gave it a 9 out of 10. It's got a great new OLED screen, twice the battery life, it's lighter, it's quieter. It's still like considered, you know, it's not like the Steam Deck 2, it's not Steam Deck Pro. It's not more powerful, but it is, it's better looking, and the battery's gonna last a lot longer. I think it's great. Oh, and it has more storage, and it's the same price. Seems like a bit win-win all around.
Not me.
Not you.
I have a Steam Deck. I have the Steam Deck, not OLED, and now I'm jealous.
That's what you're.
Yeah. Man, yeah. I think my only silver lining is that they are very clear that this is not a Steam Deck 2, and that a Steam Deck 2 will eventually come down the line in a couple years, and so that eases the buyer's remorse that I'm feeling a little bit today. But like, I don't know. That new screen is nice. The battery improvements is really nice. I feel like people don't talk about that enough. Like, Bo showed this in his review, where like Valve talked about how the battery is like more efficient and better, but like when he tested it, he found that it has like double the life of
It's crazy.
Steam Deck, and it's just wish I had that.
I think it's 10.
It's a beautiful like piece of hardware, and also like the tip of the iceberg for handheld gaming. Like we're PCs are this small now, they're going to get so much smaller. It's just going to be about the form factor. Like this is like really cool stuff. And like, I love my Steam Deck. I love it. Like it's opened up the world of at least indie PC games for me to play. I don't want to play at a desk. I just don't want to do it. I've tried, I've set it up, I've got great rigs. I don't play. I just don't want to do it. I'm at a desk all day and I don't want to do it at the end of the day. So it's like the best thing in the world for me. I love it. And I can't wait for these to be my docked play system on my television. I know they can do that now, but like my like go-to for high-end graphically intensive PC games. Like we're getting close. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I did not get the original Steam Deck model, so I think I want this one for sure. It looks great. What does this tell us, if anything, about the Switch 2? Like how does, cuz I mean Nintendo has the exclusives.
That tells us. Like the Steam Deck's a chonky boy. Like, you've seen one around the office, played one, used one, Damon?
I've played one, yeah.
Like for me, it's too big and heavy for me. So you know, like I we don't know what the Switch 2 is, but it's going to be in a little bit of a different product category, in my opinion.
That's right, and especially because little hands play Switch games.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the Switch OLED, like, it is, and Bo also mentioned this in his review, one of the ironies, it's really hard to, like, talk about that, because unless you're watching the review on an OLED screen, you can't grok, like, how different it is to see it with your eyes. But, like, I was actually surprised. I have a launch Switch, and, like, when I use the OLED Switch, I'm like, ooh, like, this screen, like, it's nice. Like, it makes a meaningful difference. And so, you know, like, OLED becoming the standard, like, Nintendo's Nintendo, so who knows? But, like, you know, I think that the Switch 2 probably has to have an OLED display, or I would hope it does at launch.
Yeah, they already have an OLED on there, right? So, like, it must be. I can't imagine them sourcing worse screens now. Maybe, but I mean, for the seems weird.
Price factor, right? I guess that's the one takeaway from this for the Switch 2, is that if they announce the Switch 2 and it doesn't have an OLED screen, I might just wait.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I do not have. I'm in the target market for the Steam Deck. I don't have one. I've had it in my cart so many times and been like, no.
No, it's nice. I love it.
Yeah, I really want one now. They're the same price. So the 512 gig OLED model is $549, and the 1 terabyte is $649. So, I mean, definitely a lot more expensive than the Switch.
Here's my thing. You don't need to buy the 500 gigabyte model because that thing accepts SD cards. And so, like, I turned my 200 and whatever the 200 plus gigabyte model is, and I have that up to like a terabyte of storage.
I don't think they offer that storage for the OLED, though.
No.
It starts at 512.
No, understood.
They have one terabyte also.
Yeah, one terabyte.
Sorry, I thought you were saying that, but it still has the SD card slot. The new one does, the new Steam Deck.
Yep. Anyway, I'm excited. I want one. I'm going to get one.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Chris Herrera did. And Chris says, hey, Damon and Goose Camp counselors. In a previous episode, you mentioned something about not caring about the story of a video game. I've noticed that a lot of people in the video game community have the same sentiment that they don't care about the story. This really baffles me. I can't quite understand it. Why would anyone play a video game and not care about the story? I'm guessing this comes from the NES and Super Nintendo era. I'm 33 years old. I grew up playing NES and Super Nintendo, but I still remember caring about the story in a video game. I recently beat Prey, and I found it amazing. It's probably one of my favorite games of all time, along with The Last of Us and Tears of the Kingdom. However, I don't think I could see myself liking that game If all I did was play it for the gameplay and not the story, what would be the point in going forward? I would love to hear your thoughts, as well as the other hosts, on not caring for the story in video games. This is mostly Sam and I think. I don't want to speak for you, but we've talked about how, for Sam and I at least, the story is not very important in games. How about you, Matt?
I love video game stories. I think
I know a lot of people do.
I think some of the best stories I've ever experienced in my life have come from video games, and not like I. Okay, so the most like story forward games, like I guess visual novels, but even like cinematic games, like Uncharted. Mm-hmm. Not my favorite video game stories, right? Like, my favorite video game stories are, like, Bloodborne, where, like, the story is discoverable, right? But you have to put in the effort, and the gameplay is a means to discover
Like lore-based stuff. Mm-hmm.
And so the gameplay serves as a means to access the story, and in that way, they're both, it's like a wonderful synergy, you know?
Mm-hmm. But, sure. I mean, I think a lot of people out there, maybe more than not, do like story in video games. Sam, do you want to address this?
I mean, I've done it so many times.
I mean, you don't have to. Matt is, I can take
Matt, Matt just did a really good job of explaining when video games can do something different and why that works and how what he just described is a perfect example of like why storytelling in games can be cool. Portal is another, you know, the much vaunted example of that. My point is that it doesn't matter that if I like story or not in games. That's not what I'm saying. My point is that games are bad at telling stories a lot of the time. Because what they're doing is they're grafting on a poorly acted, poorly written, and poorly performed, you know, just a bad B movie onto a video game. Like, and like, you can't get around that in a lot of these huge games. They're getting better and more expensive, but they're still kind of cruddy at that. And then on top of that, like, a book and a movie is a better vehicle to convey this stuff. That's all my point is that games don't need to do that. And so what the reader's kind of missing here is that games offer something even cooler than maybe a story, and that you can play a game with a bunch of friends and enjoy it. It has nothing to do with story. It's called online gaming and everybody does it, right? Like, those games are not story games. And you know where that started? In the arcade, where there's pinball machines and arcade machines and everybody stood around smoking cigarettes in the 70s and played games together. Like, those are social events that are like not as fun as watching a movie or reading a book because they're social and interesting. Those are like the concept of why story matters in games is not a black and white. Do you like story in games or not? The nuance is that story can be much better handled in other media for now. And games are breaking through and doing really interesting things with story and telling them in really interesting ways now. But it wasn't that way 10 years ago. When every game you'd play was like a retelling of the movie you just watched because it was literally the game based on the movie. Like, that's not good stuff, you know?
Yeah. I do think that storytelling in games has improved a lot. And I think the original The Last of Us is an example of a game that probably wouldn't be much less effective without the story, I think. But in general,
it's not the story is not
but the
better
show
as the
is
game.
Better than the game. I
mean, yeah. Yeah, it is.
That's exactly, you're exactly so, right on two counts, though. That game would suck without a good story because it's about murdering a bunch of people for no reason.
But the
story is told better in a TV show.
But that's where I'm at as like, well. It's like, there's no, like, you wouldn't, you, and I think I've used this line on GameScoop before, of like, you wouldn't write a script and film a television show that was like, and then for the next 10 minutes, the character rubbed up against a wall trying to figure out where they were supposed to go. Like, it's not... You know, so like any video game that's trying to tell a movie like story, I would rather, you know, watch the movie. Like, I'd rather have a director and an expert sort of, you know, controlling, you know, the pace and what I'm seeing and how I'm feeling. Like, I have two answers to this question. One is that I'm more of like a systems guy. That's what I'm here for. It's what I like about video games. That's why I like Factorio.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Why I like Factorio. Mm-hmm. I like exploring video game systems and how they interact, and that's just the joy that I get out of the medium. And two, like, there are so many video games that have told incredible stories, but they lean into the video game medium and being interactive. And like, you know, this is not the best video game story, but just the example that popped into my head was like Phoenix Wright, where like, you're uncovering the mystery and you are the one interrogating these suspects. And like, that cannot be replicated in a movie or TV show. Or like, you know, the classic example for a long time was The Walking Dead, right? Like, or interactive fiction. Like, those are unique to the medium. Whereas this trend of like, I really like the story in the Uncharted games. I think they're fun and interesting and engaging, but it's trying to make a popcorn movie in a video game, and they will never, ever be better than popcorn movies at that. in my opinion.
And much like Justin said, I'm also like a systems guy. I like games. I like learning the rules. I like, you know, seeing what I can get away with. Can I exploit the rules? I like settling into a nice gameplay loop and just enjoying that. Mm-hmm. And then your games have an objective that you're trying to reach or solve. Like, I just like all that. Like, video games as a medium is almost the only game medium that does add a story into it. I'm sure the board games do that as well. But like, for most of human history, there have always been games, but they don't have stories. Baseball, golf, chess, Go. These are all games. They all have rules and win-loss scenarios and goals that you're trying to accomplish, but there's no story in there. Like, game, like, and for most of human history, people have played games just for the gameplay, as Chris Herrera says here. Don't need a story to go along with it. Games, like, they're getting better at it. In the early days, games didn't have a story. They really just had a premise. That was just an excuse for like what's happening on screen. The princess has been kidnapped. Mario has to go rescue the princess. It's not a story, it's just a premise. They're getting better with like The Last of Us. And I think Spider-Man 2 is a good example. They, instead of like stopping down to give you exposition and then letting you go play, and then they stop down, watch a cutscene, get story, and go play. It's all woven in through the gameplay, but people are just chatting and you're learning more about what's going on. I think that's a smart way to handle it. But just me, I'm here for the game part of it, and the story's not the game. The story is just something that's going alongside the game. The game is the rules and the mechanics, the systems that you get to use, and then the goal that you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I remember, you know, we came up in an interesting time in which you had to fill in a lot of story gaps yourself, because games, you know, may have told you in an introduction booklet, this is what he was referring to, the writer, in an instruction booklet, like what the premise is, and then you kind of go off and do it. But think about that. And what's interesting about that. So The Legend of Zelda, or a better example, but one that nobody will get, so I'll just use Legend of Zelda is Zork, but early text adventures. But like, they require your imagination. They require you to think like this little blobby guy walking around the screen is having this grand adventure. And I still get that sense when I play a new Zelda game that you are telling your own story. You're going and you're exploring and you're filling in blanks that the game doesn't need to stop and fill in for you. It doesn't need to say, and this is how this cave was made. It was made when this happened, and it was because of these guys. Like, that stuff you just don't need. You're just like, you went into a cave and you kind of found a cool scenario, and they're like, it's passive storytelling a lot, or it's imaginative storytelling. And the imagination is you. So like, I kind of use the story thing defensively sometimes, because like, I want to play those games that have bad stories. Like, I don't care. I don't care. Mm. Like, I'm not going to sit there and watch a 20-hour TV show that's bad. But, like, I'll absolutely play a game that is mechanically interesting that has a bad story. I can separate myself from that and then be like, that game was amazing. That's a good thing, to be able to enjoy something and then be like, yeah, but I... Mm. Did you lose me?
No, we did for a second, but you're back. Okay. I mean, Damon's favorite story moment in a game is when you find a new belt and you need to go inside your belt and do adventures in your belt and then level it up. And then that's really just all you're looking for. Weird penguins. And
I love good Disgaea humor. People keep asking me if I've played Disgaea 7, and I have not yet. It's because Disgaea 6 was such a, I didn't even bother with it because it was such a, they sort of seem to have lost their way. However, I do hear very good things about Disgaea 7, so I'll check it out eventually.
And they're 3D now? Is that why you were...
They dropped the hand-drawn like pixel art, and they just have their 3D polygonal characters now.
That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it is a bummer.
Art style looks really good.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, I think a lot of people care about stories in games. That's just our thoughts on it. That brings us to video game 20 questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Steve in Oakley, Minnesota. Let the questioning begin.
Steve in Minnesota. Does this game have a good story that people like?
No.
It's got a bad story that people hate.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, is it worth continuing to tug on this thread of, like, does it have a story at all? Maybe it's a baseball game.
We never ask stuff like that.
Does this game have much of a story in the game at all? A narrative structure to it? Is that a story?
It has a story.
Okay. This is really interesting. We gotta remember these ones, okay? Yeah. These are good questions.
Yeah, it's not a baseball game.
Unless it's MLB the Show games.
What's the robot one?
Yeah. They do have story modes. Yeah, even that's a horrible question because even the NBA games have story modes now. Yeah. Is that FIFA game where you came up from the streets?
Base Wars, that's what I was thinking of. Robots are playing baseball for some reason. There has to be a backstory.
How good is Base Wars?
I'll allow
shooting
you
the
to,
baseballs out of cannons.
I'll allow you to count this one out. But someone did suggest Base Wars this week, but we used that game last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You already had it. So it's not Base Wars.
Yeah, is this a sports? Good. Is this a sports sci-fi or combat game? And you'd be like, yes.
But which one? All of them. I want to do that though. Okay, is this a sports or puzzle or I don't know what third one should I do?
Platformer.
Is this a sports puzzle or platformer game?
No.
Is this based on a license?
Yes.
Oh, and it's a bad story. This is going to be good.
Ooh, what does that mean?
It's an Avatar game, probably.
I mean, he didn't say it was like actively a bad story, but just like it's not like...
It's not like notable.
I think that's Avatar.
It's based on license.
In this context, a license game is like based on like a movie license or a TV license, something like that, or... Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Movie, TVs, comics... sometimes soda pop, and one game is based on a pizza character, the Noid.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
I think it's probably The Lion King for the Super Nintendo. Did this game come out in the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
No, that's five.
It's not The Lion King, y'all.
Is this based on a movie property?
No.
Oh.
Ooh. Could be Sneak King. I think we've had that before, actually.
Oh, is that the Burger King game?
Yeah. Sure is. Okay, it could be The Hobbit, which was not based off. They only had the book license.
Mm-hmm. Did this come from comic books or books?
No.
What does that leave us?
Straight up television.
Yeah, or Cool Spot or similar.
Oh, yeah.
Or totally. It could be still Sneak King.
Was this based on television?
No.
What the heck? What do we got left?
Okay. So we have fast food, which I don't know if there's more besides Sneak King.
There's Doritos Racer.
Okay, yeah, exactly.
Doritos
I have
Crash
a sidebar
Course.
Question,
also
Damon.
Doritos Crash
wait,
Course.
Wait, sidebar. I don't want this counting as a question.
Okay.
We asked earlier if it was a sports game, and you said no.
Mm-hmm.
Does that include racing games?
Let's say yes, that includes racing games.
So, but wait, yeah. Yes, so that includes not a racing, racing games.
You should assume so you have also ruled out racing games.
Understood. Okay, thank you for clarifying. It's the end of the day for me.
So it's not Doritos Kart or whatever you said it was.
Yeah. And
our fighting games, sports games, they get a lot of exercise.
And that also means it's not like, you know, just a licensed, you know, I don't know, some BMW racing garbage, like something like that.
This is so confusing, but I think we're on the right track.
So it's not movie
limited books, comics, TV, movies.
What does that leave us with?
Music.
Okay. Yeah. So sure. Could be like Beatles Rock Band.
Oh, yeah.
50 Cent green, Blood on the Sand.
50 Cent Blood on the Sand. That game's come up a lot lately.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this from the... Go ahead.
Well, I don't want to. You go. mine was stupid.
It could be an iPhone game that's based on one of these things, right?
But it's not based off one of these things.
No, I'm just saying it could be like maybe we're not thinking of like some licensed things that are on iPhone.
Yeah.
I don't know what those would be though.
Is this is this based off any kind of work of is the game a work of fiction, but is the license it's based on some kind of work of fiction of some kind?
No.
Like a play.
No.
So
like Shakespeare.
So no, it's not. No. Is it based off is it fast food based?
No, that's 10.
Oh man, sorry. For
is it based on a? Is it based on a celebrity? We just have to keep going this route. Or celebrities?
Yeah. Can you give me your definition of celebrity?
Sure. Yeah. No. It's a person that's notable in our culture for the creation of something or non-creation of something that we all know the name of.
Okay. Yes.
Is this a rhythm game?
Yes.
Oh. Ah, it probably is the Beatles rock band.
Yeah.
Or okay. Aerosmith. Guitar band. Hero. Guitar. There was a weird time. I think the
Beatles
did a
rock
Green
band
Day
have
one.
A story. I guess it tells the story of the Beatles.
Yeah.
Does this game require plastic instruments?
Yes.
Ah, nice.
This is a back door to this one. I mean,
we were circling it a few questions ago.
But why would there be a question? Like, Van Halen's definitely a celebrity, right? Like, I mean.
Well, okay. So who got Guitar Hero and or Rock Band collaborations? It was like Green Day, Beatles,
Aerosmith, I think, Aerosmith. Rolling Stones. I don't know.
I mean, it could just be straight up Rock Band or Guitar Hero, right?
I don't know.
Is this a sequel? How may I ask this? Is this a sequel or a spinoff instead of a first game?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, I think it's one of those. Is this a Rock Band game?
No, that's 15.
It's a Guitar Hero game.
We can get this. There's only so many. There's Metallica. That's basically.
Oh, I forgot about Metallica. Yeah, there was a Metallica one. I can't remember which ones there were.
I think it's Van Halen and Metallica and Aerosmith. Is that right?
DJ Hero wasn't like branded.
Oh yeah, there's DJ Hero too.
Yeah, and there's DJ Hero 2.
DJ Hero 2. I mean, it had Daft
But it's
Punk
not DJ it. Hero because it's not first of its name.
Right. Damon, does this game have the name of a band or musical artist in the name of the game?
Yes.
Nice.
All right. So it's not just a generic rhythm game that counts as based on a license.
Is it based on an artist from the Bay Area?
Yes.
Okay. It's Guitar Hero Metallica.
Are they from the Bay Area?
From San Francisco.
I never knew that.
Huh. I was going to say Green Day, but Green Day's from Sacramento, and I guess the jury's out on whether or not Sacramento's the Bay Area.
No. Green Day is from Berkeley.
Berkeley.
It would be totally fine. Did they do a Guitar Hero or a Rock Band?
I name-dropped that, but I don't actually know that that's true.
Oh.
I don't either. Is this based on a punk band?
No.
Oh, okay. Well.
Yeah. Okay. Is this Guitar Hero Metallica?
Yes.
Hey.
Guitar Hero Metallica. 2009. For PS3, 360, Wii, and PS2. Still coming out then.
Are you shocked that we arrived at this?
No, I thought you could get this. I knew this would be a fun one.
How's the story?
There's some sort of story mode, but that was like one of the things people didn't like about it. You're like traveling the world as on tour with Metallica, something like that.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I remember that. You're like, they're like, hey, man, we need you to come like play guitar for us. Like something like that, right? Like, and then you're like, there's tryouts.
This is going to be embarrassing. I don't listen to Metallica. Who's the guitarist for Metallica?
Well, there's two of them. There's James Hetfield, who's the singer and guitarist, and then Kirk Hammett.
Right. It would be very funny if the story involved like Hetfield getting in like an accident in the beginning of the game, and they're like, you're the guy.
Yeah. It wouldn't have done that because their original bass player was killed in a terrible bus accident.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I had forgotten that this was in 2009. This is when they had the full instrument set. So there was guitar, bass, drums, and vocals for this whole thing.
And I bet there was like Guitar Hero custom, like Metallica, whatever guitars they use, they probably made those, right?
Yep.
They're like the Gibson Explorers or whatever, like the cool jazz.
Yeah, yeah. Anything.
They didn't know it at the time. It was the beginning of the end, because then they started doing, you know, Rock Band, Green Day, and Guitar Hero, Van Halen, and then that was it. Then they just went away forever.
I think this was the second band-focused one. I think Aerosmith came before this.
Mm. Mm.
Guitar Hero, Aerosmith.
The irony is, at the time, you could not give away those instruments. I think, funny enough, Tom and I were talking about Guitar Hero and Rock Band on the drive to BlizzCon.
Yeah. I was about to jump in and say, as much as you couldn't give those things away like 5 years ago, now if you're trying to build a new Rock Band kit, it's like really $80 money for a drum kit alone.
Yeah.
And there's rare guitars that are like super expensive now. We had a room that was just leaned up guitars and disassembled drums at IGN. Yep. Do you guys remember that?
Yep. Yes.
Small,
I mean,
just a sea of greasy plastic.
Like, it's like every year there'd be a new both Guitar Hero and Rock Band games, and people would be buying new instruments almost every year. It was crazy.
Well, and the third parties, they would send us a million Mad Catz guitars all the time, and then Gibson would get in there and make, you know, a line for Guitar Hero, and then Fender would get involved. They just did all kinds of stuff like that.
And those games, those rhythm games, and, you know, Guitar Hero, that was so out of vogue that in Guitar Hero 1 that all the songs were covers. Like, they couldn't get the real songs. And then, you know, obviously it became the exact opposite. It became a cash cow, but like, man.
Shout out Wave Group.
I don't know what Wave Group is.
They're the ones that did the covers in Guitar Hero 1.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Oh, that's so cool. What a cool job that would have been.
I would say shout out to Frequency and Amplitude, which are the games that the developer made before, you know, Harmonix. There were rhythm games that they made before Guitar Hero, and they're really good.
Yep.
I never got into Guitar Hero, but Rock Band was a huge hit in my household, and I loved the drums. The drums were so fun.
Well, in
just nailed it.
Guitar Hero Metallica, there was an Expert Plus mode where you could hook up, for the drums, you could hook up a second bass pedal to do like the double bass drumming that Lars Ulrich does in Metallica. Must be super.
Can you imagine how like is it sensitive enough to do that? Like that guitar pedal was, the bass drum pedal was so bad.
I don't know.
That's great.
Anyway, Guitar Hero Metallica. That was a good one. Thank you for the suggestion, Steve in Minnesota. Viewers, listeners, if you have your own recommendations for 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to Matt for joining me here in studio. Thank you to Sam and Justin. Thank you to producer Tom for making this episode possible. My name is Damon. We'll be back next week with more fresh game scoops for you. And actually, I'll let you know right now, I'll be in studio with Sam and Pear in San Francisco. Justin, feel free to fly in if you want to. We're going to record on Tuesday. Well,
no, thank you. But, okay. Happy to join here from the comfort of my home.
Okay. Well, it'll be fun regardless. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop, and we're out.
Thank you. I actually really like
that. We have so many opinions this week on Zelda and GTA. We're going to get in trouble, and then stories and games. It's just going to be a shit show in the comments this week.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
It's fine. It'll be cool. Bye, everybody.
Yep.
Fun.
See ya.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.